Ladies and gentlemen, to whom it concerns, it's The Late Late Show. And here is your host, Gay Byrne.
Thank you.
This is Bondi Tunes International, the week that was.
This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting from Sydney, Australia. Of course, around the world, and around the world I go to our North America political correspondent, Ronan Seagrave, who is in Canada, in Winnipeg. Welcome to our broadcast.
Good evening, Henry.
It's quite a week that was, as our jingle says, with Enda at the beginning of this show. Gay Byrne basically was RTE. He was RTE, the national broadcaster in Ireland. He was a broadcaster for some six decades on Irish radio, then Irish television, and he actually went to Granada TV in the UK at one stage. But let's talk about Gay's involvement with Irish politics. The social life of Ireland at the time. This show started on the 5th of July, 1962. It was called The Late Late Show. 3 days after I was born, Ronan, I think I just got into the world three days in time to watch Gaybo. Tell us about Gay Byrne and his effect on the Irish scene, because let's face it, the Catholic Church ran Catholic Ireland at the time.
It did. I mean, Gay Byrne he was without question, Henry, one of the most significant people in Ireland over the past, as you say, 50, 60 years. I mean, we both grew up with Gay Byrne. He was everywhere. He had his daily radio show on RT Radio 1. He was probably the first person on Irish radio, Henry, to have the phone in, people actually ringing him up and talking about issues of the day. I mean, he was doing that in late 60s, early 70s. And then, of course, The Late Late Show, as you say, which started in 1962 and which he presented continuously for 37 years.
Yeah, but and it's important to note that Gay Byrne, let's just go back a bit. In the late 50s, he had been working on the national broadcaster, RTE Radio 1, which was the only broadcaster in Ireland. He went for a fleeting visit to the UK and Granada TV. And that was 1963. But in 1962, he is given 12 shows, apparently, of The Late Late Show on RTE. And look at all these years later.
Yeah, quite extraordinary. No one could have thought back then that Gay Byrne would have been presenting that show, as I say, for 37 years. I mean, he did, as you say, spend a bit of time sort of going back and forth to England. I mean, famously on Granada TV, he interviewed the Beatles.
Yes.
In a memorable clip. He didn't really like England, Henry. I mean, he didn't like London at all, and he made a decision sort of in the early 60s to really just focus his career in Ireland and living in Dublin. Mm. And he became really the face and voice of RTE, as I say, with the daily radio show and The Late Late Show, which he also produced. I mean, he was a man, Henry, with an enormous appetite for work.
Yeah, and he did. He did produce. We've got a bit of a bad line here, Ronan, but he did produce it. And just to explain, producing means timing the ad breaks. And I think RTE had ad breaks at the time, still do. And if you're a producer, you've got to time everything. And he's doing that and multitasking. And I just want to briefly mention something very funny, because Gay Byrne never used an auto cue. Never. He hated them. And in the 90s, and sorry, I think we need to go further into the early 2000s, when a man called Ryan Tubridy, I never pronounce his name properly, who continues to do The Late Late Show, one of the longest running entertainment TV shows on the planet. Anyway, he's sitting there being interviewed by Ryan, and he goes up to the camera and covers the auto cue and says, "Now try and see, how you present this show." It is interesting, Ronan, that there was really very little organization to this show. Use the term freewheeling. It really was, wasn't it?
It was freewheeling. I mean, the show was a mix of, often celebrity interviews, big name movie stars, people like Charlton Heston appeared on the show. Gay was terrific, Henry, with guests I would describe as sort of raconteurs, Peter Ustinov, Spike Milligan, Billy Connolly. They were kind of frequent guests on the show, and Gay would just let them tell sort of very, very funny stories. But then it also had sort of what I would describe as sort of groundbreaking sort of social debates.
Yes.
Which are really the first time, Henry, on Irish television, such subjects were debated. I mean, he had a show in, I think, in the late 70s or early 80s on sort of gay rights, which was not heard of at all on RTE. Various vigorous debates on subjects like birth control. There's a famous clip of Gay demonstrating how to use a condom, for which he got a lot of criticism at the time, when I think such devices were banned in Ireland.
Yes, they were.
Divorce, and, abortion.
And Ronan, we'll just play a clip, and just to explain to our audience, this is radio, not television, but he's showing up a condom not only to the audience in studio, but to the entire population of Ireland. Because you've got to remember, there was only one channel on a Saturday night as it was broadcast then. Everyone watched The Late Late Show, and a lot of nasty letters came into the RTE studios after he did this, showing the condom. Let's take an audio grab of that now.
OK, if you'll pardon the expression, Roisin, would you roll it there, please? The condom is made of rubber, whether you knew it or not. There are two main types.
I would not encourage my children to use condoms.
How old are your children?
One's 27, one's down at the telly ball, but you have to leave.
Never before has your show stooped so low to discuss so little. Oh, boy, what a show it turned out to be. Not a holy show, but a dirty, disgraceful, rude, garbage heap of codswallop.
Of course, we recognise that people have misgivings about homosexuality because it's something that they don't come across every day.
But how can you say it's normal?
Yeah, yeah, that is
because it's perfectly normal for me.
It's not normal for a man to be preoccupied with another man's back passage.
What about men who are besotted with women's front passages? Is the quick answer to that?
Okay.
Good evening.
Hello. You're asking what would we do if our husbands had an affair?
Aye.
A lot of us would be only delighted to get a rest.
Gee, Ronan,
how
did you get away with that? Ronan.
Well, you know, he, if you remember, Henry, one of the very early, I mean, I can't even believe I'm describing it as a controversy, but it was at the time, was the Bishop and the Knighty affair, if you remember that. And this was an early Late Late Show in the early 60s, when Gay Byrne was asking newly married couples in the studio audience what they were wearing on their wedding night. And one newly married woman declared that she wasn't wearing anything at all. And this triggered a ferocious letter from a Catholic bishop saying it was purveying filth and how disgusting and shameful it was. And Gay Byrne offered an apology the following week, and he realised it was a mistake, Henry. Gay Byrne never, ever apologised after that for anything that appeared in the Late Late Show. And as I say, he really wished, if you like, the ringmaster or the narrator of sort of social change in Ireland. I can remember other very controversial shows. One, Henry, was two women who were nuns who formed a relationship.
Ooh.
And again, there was outrage in Ireland that, you know, two lesbian nuns were appearing on the Late Late Show. There were even people protesting outside, singing hymns like Faith of Our Fathers while this was broadcast. Another one, Henry, I remember, was when he interviewed a woman known as Madden Sin, or Cynthia Payne.
Oh, famous, Payne, yes.
If you remember her, yes, the sort of brothel madam in England at various sort of celebrity politician-type clients. And again, there was outrage that she was going to appear in the Late Late Show, and again, various letters and complaints that Gay was purveying filth, if you like. But the interesting thing about Gay Byrne, while he was pushing the envelope on all of these social debates, and it's in areas like contraception, divorce, abortion, he was actually quite a conservative figure himself.
Yes.
I mean, he was a practicing Catholic, a weekly mass goer, in fact, in his later years, Henry, a daily mass goer. He was quite conservative in his political views. He was known to have support or an association with the Fianna Fáil party. So Gay was no raging liberal, but what he was, Henry, was that he recognised that certain dark corners of Ireland needed to have a light shone on them. And he never really went over the line, Henry, if you know what I mean. We had these debates and there was a lot of shouting and people giving different points of view, but he never strayed into being offensive, or actually Gay himself ever sort of offering strong personal views on any of these topics. He let
these great sort of national debates play out every Friday or Saturday night in Irish television.
And he was basically walking a tightrope between the Catholic yes. Church running the country, not the government, or running the government who ran the country. RTE was the only broadcaster, of, as I've mentioned, and he had to be very, very, as you say, he's a conservative, he was a Catholic, a practicing Catholic. He had to be really careful how he constructed and did these interviews with people from all sections of the community.
Yeah, I think the way I would describe Gay Byrne-Henry was that he was a very kind of tolerant person. While he might have had his own sort of personal views on things, he was a tolerant person. He recognised the world moved to very different drums. He recognised also that Ireland kind of had to change, and that you know, his programmes actually featuring members of the sort of gay community were actually quite groundbreaking, because such people had never really been shown on Irish television or talking about this issue. Mm. And whatever Gay's personal views as a traditional Catholic on it, he treated those people at a time when many others wouldn't have, with absolute respect and recognising this was part of Irish life and Irish society. Mm. He did play to other parts of Irish society, and we'd often have sort of comedians and singing priests and that kind of thing on the show as well. He really...
It was a real mixing pot, wasn't it? I mean, he covered the really serious stuff, and he did a lot of the fun stuff. And we will be playing some
funny stuff.
We will be playing some of the just clips from some of the interviews, such as Phil Lynott, Sinead O'Connor, and other people who appeared on the Late Late Show over the decades. I just want to go back to 1963 when Gay did go to the UK, and we've mentioned this before. He ended up apparently being the first person to interview the Beatles. And here's a clip of him on Granada TV in 1963 with comedian Ken Dodd, who wouldn't shut up. And this audio clip, I'm trying to get...
No surprise there, Henry.
I'm trying to get more of the Beatles in from this clip than Ken Dodd. Take a listen.
He owes a lot of his success to his hairstyle, fellas.
No, I don't think it helped at all.
It probably would have been better if it was bald.
But it's bald.
No.
Yeah, would you in time like work gags into your act? And...
I don't know. It's hard. Most of our gags are either made up and so they either die or we keep them if they go down. Well,
sort of
that
impromptu.
Jewel thing that we thought of the night before, you know.
Well, it certainly went down well, didn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, went down very well, right? Yeah. So you'd like to do a bit more comedy?
Yeah, but it's so hard, isn't it?
Okay, how about a word of advice from Mr. Kenneth Dodd, then?
Well, I think the best anybody starting out in show business... is that a serious question?
Yeah, that's a serious
I think anybody starting out in show business should be like the Beatles and be original. That's the thing. I think originality is the secret of success.
Okay. Boys, thank you very much.
Okay, it has been questioned whether he was the first to interview the Beatles, but I kind of believe it, you know.
I think he probably was, Henry, and you know, he could have had, like his great friend and contemporary Terry Wogan, and indeed his other good friend Eamon Andrews, who you know, had hugely successful careers in broadcasting in Britain, and that could well have been a path that Gay Byrne could have followed. But he really was a home bird. He liked living in Dublin. He married Kathleen Watkins in the early 60s, probably the first big celebrity wedding, Henry, in Ireland.
Yes, yes.
Kathleen Watkins was a continuity announcer on Irish television where they met. And he was very much attached to his home and where he lived in Howth in Dublin. And he didn't like London. And he was happy, I think, being sort of the doyen of broadcasting in Ireland.
Yes, and I just want to do a station ID here. This is Bondi Tunes International Broadcasting from Sydney in Australia. I'm Henry, and I'm talking with Ronan Seagrave, our North America political correspondent in Winnipeg in Canada. We're talking about the late, great Gay Byrne, who passed away aged 85 from a long illness with cancer. At one stage, the Late Late Show was broadcast. Of course, it was broadcast live all the time. And sadly,
yes.
in 1999, I think it was the 50th anniversary of the Late Late Show, sadly, no one in RTE had the gumption to record these live shows.
No, I mean, there's sort of various clips available, but a lot of them, unfortunately, are lost. And yes, it went out live. And, you know, because the show was so freewheeling, anything unexpected could happen. And there's a very memorable clip of him... he regularly had competitions, Henry. I mean, these were the days before sort of email and the internet, where you know people would send in postcards of answers to a quiz he would do the previous week. So people would send in cards, and then he'd draw out a card at random and telephone the person to ask them another question, and then they'd win whatever the prize was. And we're often quite good, like, with things like cars and that kind of thing. But
yeah.
It was one evening he rang up a lady, and she was quite quiet on the phone. He said, "Well, this is Gay Byrne," and she stayed very quiet. She said, and then she said, "Oh, Gay, my daughter died this week."
Oh, yes.
And that was, you know, he handled that with such enormous skill and empathy. And the one thing that Gay Byrne had was very, very high emotional intelligence. He knew how to work an interview and sometimes get them to say things they didn't want to say. But he handled that with extraordinary skill and empathy that it's hard to imagine very few others, even experienced broadcasters, handling something like that. Again, it was live TV.
Mm.
And he...
I don't even think they had a five-second delay on that.
No. It was going out live. And he had the poet Brendan Kennelly there, who read a poem quite powerfully to the lady. But he handled her obvious distress and grief in a wonderfully empathetic way. And that was really one of his great strengths.
You use the word empathy, that's it.
You know, he had it, Henry. And, you know, there's another great clip. I mean, Gay, after he finished with The Late Late Show in 1999, riding off famously on the Harley Davidson that U2 gave him, he continued to stay active in broadcasting. And he started doing a show, Gay being quite religious himself, on sort of spiritual matters. And he interviewed various sort of celebrities talking about their concept of God.
Yes, it was Stephen Fry. It was called The Meaning of Life.
The Meaning of Life, yeah, and quite deep kind of philosophical conversations with I say, various well-known people. But there's a famous one episode he did with Stephen Fry, the comedian and broadcaster. And
who Fry, doesn't believe in God.
No, Fry's an atheist. Clearly, Gay Byrne was not. But Fry, you know, goes into his own view that there isn't a God. How could there be a God when there's, you know, things like children getting cancer? And if there is a God, it's a very cruel God. And you see Gay looking at him. And he's not. He's looking at him curiously. He's analysing and assessing in quite an intelligent way everything he's saying. And clearly, there's no doubt probably Gay personally didn't agree with what he was saying. But again, he handled that sort of situation incredibly professionally. He didn't go off, you know, challenging him or being aggressive or anything like that. He was sort of genuinely interested in what he was saying and why he was saying it.
Mm.
And also, he had great skill as an interviewer in doing that.
He absolutely did. Bob Geldof went on to The Meaning of Life. And just to explain, The Meaning of Life was really like a question and answer session. And I think it was broadcast in the early zeros or the late 90s. And it really was kind of a religious show shrouded in not a religious show, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
Bob Geldof famously went off at Gabo and use the F word. Let's take a listen to both Stephen Fry and Bob right now.
Suppose what Oscar believed in as he died, in spite of your protestations, suppose it's all true, and you walk up to the pearly gates and you are confronted by God. What will Stephen Fry say to him, her, or it?
I will basically, what's known as the Odyssey, I think, I'll say, bone cancer in children? What's that about? How dare you? How dare you create a world in which there is such misery that is not our fault? It's not right. It's utterly, utterly evil. Why should I respect a capricious, mean-minded, stupid God who creates a world which is so full of injustice and pain? That's what I'd say.
Is there a God?
No.
Nothing?
No.
So at the end of things then, it's pull the plug, lights out, gone, finished. No.
Thank God.
Oh, don't say that. You have had such a fantastic, amazing, brilliant life.
I've had a weird life and...
But fantastic and amazing as well.
It's exhausting.
Yes.
But, you know, as I say, blessed oblivion. You know, thanks very much. Good night. And it is a great comfort to know there's nothing. The rhetoric of religion seems odd to me, the supreme being. What? Are we living in Star Wars? Oh, Lord. Lord? What is it? Lord of the Rings? Lord? You know? Golf Lord, you know? I mean, what is that? Lord, oh, Lord God, you know? The language is so weird.
It's interesting that Gay despite his own religious belief, and we've mentioned this earlier on in this broadcast, but he really was remarkable at this point in his life. He was in his early 70s, I imagine, when he was doing this show, The Meaning of Life, Ronan.
Yes, he was. I mean, he did carry on working. I mean, one reason was he was a workaholic all his life. The second, rather sadly, was Gay was a man who lost two fortunes throughout his life.
Indeed.
In 1984, he discovered his accountant, and indeed someone who was a close personal friend, I think he was godfather to one of his daughters, a guy called Russell Murphy, a Dublin-based accountant, had spent all of Gay's money and, in fact, left him in a considerable amount of debt. And that deeply shocked Gay, and somewhat strangely, hard it is to believe now, Henry, at that point with RTE, he was unrolling 13-week contracts, and he didn't have any kind of security or anything like that. Extraordinary as that seems, as he was the most popular broadcaster on the station. Mm. And you might remember, Henry, at that time, he got an offer to go to a US network and yes. move out to the US. And
I was about to mention that. Media speculation. He really did think seriously about going to America.
He did, and it was a way of really restoring his fortunes. I still remember the newspaper headline, Gabo Stays, you know, that he decided not to do that and stay with RTE, and he was able to negotiate, you know, better pay and a longer-term contract. But then in sort of 2008, 2009, Gay fell victim to the banking crisis and the collapse of banks. He basically put all of his money in banking shares, which turned out to be worthless. And
it was
he ended
GFC,
up
yes,
with no money again. And he returned to sort of broadcasting, doing that program, Henry. He returned to radio, doing a jazz program every Sunday.
On Lyric
FM.
He
had to sort of keep working basically into his 80s.
You know, it was interesting. He was being interviewed on The Late Late Show with Brian Tubridy, I'll never get his name right.
Tubbs, as he's known.
Well, what is his name anyway? I have to get this
Ryan
right.
Tubridy. Yeah.
Ryan Tubridy.
Known as Tubbs. Yeah.
Tubbs, okay. And he was being interviewed. He went on that show many times after he left it in 1999. And he said, yes, I'm working for Lyric FM in Ireland, here in Ireland, playing lots of my favourite jazz music, and I think I've got about 3 listeners.
Well, he probably had a few more than 3, Henry, but I, you know, he had a great love of jazz music all his life, and was quite an expert on the subject. And I think he quite enjoyed sort of going in there on a Sunday, pottering into the studio and playing some of his favourite music, which was not something he was able to do in his previous radio show, which was more sort of current affairs driven. But he had to keep working. But if you think about some things that probably didn't work as well, there was a famous interview with Gerry Adams in 1994, the Sinn Féin leader, where he refused to shake his hand. Now, that would have been the one time where Gay's mask might have slipped a bit, Henry, in terms of the personal Gay coming out and what he thought of Gerry Adams. And probably 2 other notorious interviews, Henry. One was with, again, about 1992, with a lady called Annie Murphy, who was a lady who had an affair in the 1970s with Bishop Eamon Casey, who was the Catholic Bishop of Galway. And she had a son fathered by Bishop Casey. And when the whole thing broke in the early 90s, and Casey had to basically do a flit out of Ireland, also allegations he'd used diocesan funds to pay her off.
God.
And she wrote a book, and she was, you know, she was appearing in US chat shows, and of course she appeared in The Late Late Show. And Gay was quite, again, maybe it was the traditional Catholic appearing, Henry, he was quite aggressive with her, a bit condescending to her, and he stuffed sort of the front rows of the audience with various employees or associates of Eamon Casey, who sat really disputing aspects of the story of the affair that she'd set out in her book. The other one, Henry, was famously she interviewed Terry Keane, who, as you might remember, Henry, was a gossip columnist.
Yes.
And socialite, in our best way to describe it. She wrote a column called The Keen Edge, which was quite abrasive in relation to social gossip. But it was also known that she was the mistress of Charles Haughey, former Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. In fact, she used to write about him, Henry. I mean, it wasn't ever officially said, but she used to refer to him as Sweetie. But this was the first time she walked out on television to, she was writing a book, and she was acknowledging that she'd had a 20 to 30 year affair with Charles Haughey. And that was gripping television in a way, because she started going into aspects of the relationship, how he relied on her for advice. But one of the follow-ups to that, Henry, was that Charles Haughey never spoke either to Gay Byrne or Terry Keane after that interview.
Well, no one's at a loss there on their side of the matter.
I think Gay could have lived with it. You know, it was great television. You know?
If you've just joined us, I'm talking with Ronan Seagrave in Canada. We're both brought up in Ireland, me in Dublin, and Ronan in Kells County Meath. And we're talking about growing up with the great late Gay Byrne, who was a broadcaster for nearly six decades in Ireland. I want to go back to 1981 now, and let's have a listen to the great Phil Lynott from Thin Lizzy. Take a listen.
What's this about gone to live in Hoth? Come on.
Well, that's where the big nubs hang out, don't you know that guy?
Can you see Crumlin from Hoth?
No, I wish I could.
It ruins the image, you know, Phil. Ruins the image.
Well, I was looking for a place to live in Ireland. Because, you know, when I moved away, I thought, well, I must come home, you know. Because I really suffer from homesickness. If I don't get back to Dublin, not so much Ireland, Dublin. I'm a real Dublin man. If I don't get back to Dublin within 3 months, then I really start to suffer from homesickness. So when we got married, I sent the wife over and said, see if you like Ireland, and she did. So I sent her looking for a house, and she didn't like the south side because the motorways and all go out that way, you know. So she settled for the north side.
And you're settling in well, are you?
Oh yeah, it's great. It's
what are the babbies' names?
I have Sarah, which was the song that I had a hit with, and I have a new daughter now called Kathleen. And I'm
Kathleen.
Hoping...
Kathleen. Kathleen. Nice.
I was looking for an Irish name that wasn't too pretentious. You know, like, don't get me wrong, anybody who has daughters named this. But you know that, like, when you hear Saoirse or Tara or...
Sinead.
Yeah, it sounds pretentious. And I was looking for a good Irish name. I thought Mary was a bit too over the top, so I thought Kathleen would be nice.
I loved that interview, Ronan, because Phil was such a cool guy. He was the coolest guy in town.
Yeah, Gay was great with rock stars and people like that. I mean, that's a wonderful interview because you actually saw some of the real Phil Lynott there. You were talking about his then wife and his children and his mother in the audience. He was terrific at those interviews. I mean, he interviewed you too. He interviewed major rock stars who were sort of in town effortlessly. I mean, I don't think Gay was heavily into that kind of music, but he became very friendly, actually, with Bono in particular. And of course, U2 gave him that Harley Davidson on his last show.
Yes.
As his retirement gift that he rode off onto. But he was effortlessly comfortable with incredibly famous people and actually got them really to open up. And his great skill, Henry, was Gay Byrne was always interested in the person talking to him. It wasn't about Gay Byrne, you know, doing this or doing that. He'd have a conversation with somebody, and his gentle kind of probing style got people to open up in ways that they hadn't really with other interviewers, or maybe less skilled in interviewers. I mean, the only one I can really compare him to is like Michael Parkinson, who was on British TV for many years.
Yes.
Just really, really very skillful, Henry, at what he did, you know?
He did lots of things, and let's talk about some other shows that he had on the National Broadcaster. Do you remember Housewife of the Year?
Oh,
I mean, you couldn't do that now. Housewife of the Year.
Do you know what? I actually knew, so this is true, Henry, I actually knew somebody who won it in the mid-1970s. And she was a wonderful lady. She lives actually in Iceland now, would you believe, of all places. But still with us, Aideen. But she described, telling me about this, and, you know, she had to do sort of cooking and other sort of housewife chores. I mean, it seems incredibly dated, but she for her, it was an incredible thrill. She lived in the west of Ireland. For her to go up to Dublin, to be on TV, to be interviewed by Gay Byrne, and that was just, you know, the biggest thing that could ever have happened to her. And, of course, the other one he did, Henry, was The Rose of Tralee.
Yes, I was about to mention The Rose of Tralee, an Irish version.
It isn't an Irish beauty contest.
It was an Irish version of Miss World, really. A very Irish Catholic version.
No bikinis or swimsuits, Henry, yeah.
I mean, no skirts over the knees kind of stuff.
No, indeed. No. And, of course, where the contestants had to, how would you say it, Henry, do a turn? You know, they had to do a turn, yes. Song or something like that. And it's still going incredibly, but you know, Gay, it's still going, yeah. And It's had a couple of presenters, obviously, since Gay left it. But, yeah, I mean, it does seem, again, a bit dated, but it's still going. But, again, Gay handled that with his usual sort of panache. It got enormous viewing on Irish television. The other thing I remember Gay did for a couple of summers, Henry, when the Late Late Show was off air on a summer break, he actually did kind of tours around Ireland. And
really? And what, stage tours?
Yes. Yeah, stage. Yeah, he stacked up with sort of a microphone, and my parents, I think, went to one of them. And he would stand up and sort of tell jokes. And at one time, I think he even had a magician with him, kind of doing tricks. But again, he liked being with people. He liked talking. He liked engaging with people. You know.
Yeah, he was very hands-on person on every level, not just as a broadcaster. He did a lot of stuff that people don't know. He was actually chairman of the Road Safety Authority. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Ronan, he liked motorbikes, didn't he? I mean, we talked about Bono motorbikes. Giving him a motorbike.
You know, he liked motorbikes and rode one for many years, but he was very passionate on and had an interest for many years in the subject of road safety. I mean, I think we're a bit surprised he took on the job, but he did.
Mm.
And became a really outspoken advocate in relation to road safety and safe driving and campaigning for changes that he felt were necessary in the law. I remember him, you know, with mobile phones and campaigning for changes in that. And you were talking about speeding a lot and recognizing with Ireland getting more prosperous, you had a lot of young people driving as their first car, you know, big, powerful vehicles. And maybe that wasn't such a good thing. But yeah, he remained very active in that public profile. The other thing, Henry, was he nearly ran to be president.
I was about to mention that. Yes.
Yes.
He was they wanted him to become.
Well, his associations with Fianna Fáil were for over most of his life. I mean, it was sort of known he was a supporter of the party. I mean, Charles Haughey made, prior to the Derry Keane business, made a number of appearances on the Late Late Show, as did other senior Fianna Fáil figures. If you can recall, Henry, there weren't too many other political parties leaders getting a look in. Mm. And he was approached to run. It would have been sort of as an independent, but with Fianna Fáil sort of support. And he did think about it seriously.
Mm.
But I think he decided in the end, Henry, no, not for him. He wanted to stay at what he was doing.
Maybe he didn't want to be in politics. You know, because if he was a broadcaster and he was interviewing all these people on his show, impartial is probably a good thing. And you know, in Ireland, being president in Ireland is not a powerful position. What you're doing is you're the icon for Ireland around the world, and it is an important job on that level, but it's not politics. But it could be political. This is my point. It could get political.
I think the other reason why he passed on as Henry was with Gay Byrne. I know it sounds like we're talking about somebody that we knew and it was on a television set, but Gay Byrne kept a lot of his views. He never really did an interview where he talked directly about politics or other things. He hinted at sort of some conservative views. But he was a very private person off screen. He wasn't somebody sort of turning up regularly at celebrity parties or doing things like that. He lived very quietly and privately with his family. And, you know, how many people really knew the real Gay Byrne? And I think he just didn't want to go there and recognised even in a presidential campaign, there would have been a lot of scrutiny. He would have had to have opened up other aspects of his personality that, you know, the carefully contrived, and I'm not being unkind by saying this, but, you know, the persona that was Gay Byrne doing the Late Late Show, we would have to see another Gay Byrne, and I don't think he wanted to go there.
Yeah, and not surprisingly, really, when you think about it.
No, not at all.
I'm not sure about this, you can tell me, the 50th anniversary of the Late Late Show on RTE, the national broadcaster.
I think you're talking about his last show, Henry, in 1999.
And it was the 50th, okay.
Yeah, it was his last show. Yeah,
that's right. And Sinead O'Connor came on. Take a listen.
So how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, great. Really good.
How does
really
it feel good to be holding Gay Byrne's hand on the Late Late Show?
Oh, it's
not
always
for the first time.
It's always wonderful to hold Gay's hand, as indeed it is to hold your hand.
You're nice.
And in fact, anyone's hand.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, people are wonderful, aren't they?
How did it feel singing that? All these years?
Great. I love singing it. Yeah, I love it. Love it. And it always is a special thing to do the Late Late, obviously, yeah. You know, because it is, like, it's always been the biggest kind of show in the country, hasn't it?
What is
really weird to think it's only had three presenters in 50 years. Like, how many years did you do it for?
87.
Well, seriously, though.
He did 37.
37
I did 10,
years.
And he's on
and
his,
I'm three.
He's just finishing three. Yeah, I'm
three today, actually.
Is that all you've
this
done?
My third, this is the end of my third season, yes.
It seems a lot longer.
Doesn't it?
That's kind of
no, I don't mean that at all, Ryan. You love, no, no, no,
do you think
no,
we could order some generosity of spirit into the studio? It's lacking somewhat.
You shouldn't have given us drink.
No, indeed, did yes, that's drink, Tommy's fault, of course.
I didn't have drink. I don't drink.
No, well done. Okay, well done, Sinead. That's great news. That's
what are I you, can drive.
What age were you? 1988, was it, that you
I
first came on?
I think I was 20. I was born in 66, December. I always say this is why I'm a singer, because I can't count.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was born in December 66.
So we were youngster. So it was gay, was obviously
20,
doing
that. I think, when my first record came out, yeah. So
poor Sinead. Whatever happened, Sinead?
Well, everyone remembers her turning up unexpectedly on the Late Late Show dressed as a Catholic priest. I mean, she was ordained, and I'm using that expression loosely, by a sort of rogue Catholic bishop. And it was strange. And then she went on and sort of started reciting verses of the Rosary. I mean, Sinead is now, of course, a Muslim, and is actually back recording and touring again. But yeah, he handled that again fairly sensitively. I mean, there were some accusations that maybe, you know, she wasn't well and you didn't have had her on, but he didn't handle that particular interview quite sensitively in the way he handled it. And he was good in those situations, you know, dealing with guests. I remember he had another priest on who was somebody who was sort of attending in the US to members of who were gay, and got the priest to admit on television that he was himself gay, and it was a very, very, again, very, very sensitively handled interview.
Yes, and of course, even at that point, I think that was the early 80s when that was going
yes.
on.
Yes.
Still very sensitive subject in Ireland. And
very.
As we said, you know, Gay Byrne really highlighted stuff that people really didn't talk about in the street. What do you think the Catholic Church thought of this live broadcast every week?
I think, well, there was, we do know that the former and again arch-conservative Catholic Bishop of Ireland, who was of Dublin, who was Archbishop of Dublin for many years, John McQuaid, actually tried to have Gay taken off the air. That, you know, he was purveying, you know, dangerously liberal and even blasphemous views on the Late Late Show by debating such topics, and that, you know, writing to RTE suggesting, you know, the Late Late Show and Gay be taken off air, which RTE and quite rightly ignored. And yes, he did. He shone lights, Henry, on dark corners in Ireland at that time around, you know, subjects, as I say, around gay people, abortion, you know, in the early 80s. I remember a raging debate around the first divorce referendum in 1986, and, you know, bringing on people who had marriage breakdown and what a problem that was in Ireland. And again, it was something that just wasn't talked about that much or debated that much. And he shone a light where it needed to be shone. But he did it in a way, Henry, where it was never about Gay imposing his own views. It was about, I'm going to let the debate play out. I'm going to handle the debate very professionally. I'm going to make sure that both sides get equal time. And I'm going to let the people of Ireland pass judgment.
Yeah, I just want to play another audio grab here on the same subject of, you know, people talking about stuff that people barely dared talk to, you know, about on the streets of Ireland. This is an interesting insert from 19... Sorry, there's a bus outside my window. From 1989, and it's a funny call, and Gay is talking with a Swedish...
I actually remember seeing that live at the time, Henry.
Oh, did you?
I still remember my father in fits of laughter.
He was talking to a Swedish sex therapist in the studio. Take a listen to this.
Line what did you say, Dennis? Line three. Okay, I'll take line three. Hello, line three.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Gay, how are you doing?
All right.
Gay, Johnny Devaney here from Lahadon in Mayo. I'm just wondering, would you ask that lady how often she has it herself a day? And
The gentleman, she's Swedish, and I have to slow down your speech a bit for her because he is speaking in the lilting tongue of County Mayo. He wants to know how often you have it yourself.
I wouldn't answer that on television.
Why not?
Because it's a private matter, and okay. It involves other people as well.
Mr. Devaney, no information. What's your next pitch?
Yeah, how often does she think a healthy book like me from Mayo or whatever? I'm struggling once a day at the moment.
You're what?
I'm struggling once a day at the moment.
What? You're struggling to do it or not to do it?
Well, to do it if I could.
You're not bragging now, Mr. Devaney, are you?
Oh, no, Gay. Why, I mean, you don't do it once a day, do you now?
You enjoy it, do you?
Oh, God, I do, surely, don't you?
I've had my moments, yes, I must say, now and then, yes. Any other questions for Dagmar, no?
Well, how often does she think it would be healthy,
How often would it be healthy for him to do it?
It sounds just fine. If he's doing it every day, that's fine. If he does it once a week, that's fine, too. I mean, it depends on what each person wants.
That's right. You happy with that?
Listen, Gay, on a more serious note now...
I thought you were serious.
You're kind of too serious, but why not we see? If you could ask the lady there, would it be unhealthy for people not to have sex during their normal periods, reproduction periods, times, you know, 19 to 25? I'm thinking of our religious brethren, seeing as you have John on there with you as well, you know. Would that be unhealthy, or could they function normally without it?
Between the ages of 19 and 25?
Well, you know what I mean yourself, in the religious context.
I not only have to translate what he says, I have to translate what he means.
Like,
would this lead to a sort of repression?
Would I write to you and let you know what I mean?
No, don't write to me. No, don't write to me. Don't write to me. But would you think that this would lead to repression between 19 and 25?
See, what happens, according to research, is that what you don't do during the day, you will do when you're asleep at night. So it's all balanced out, and therefore, no, it is not unhealthy, and lots of people do well without sex.
Of course.
But it's usually more enjoyable if you do it when you're awake.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Devaney. I hope that wraps that up for you. Wow, that gave him something to think about.
It goes back to the fact that he covered everything. He covered comedy, he covered music, you know, and while we're at it, let's play another clip, actually, of Gay and his good mates, you know, from U2. And I think this is from 83. Bono and the lads are back in the studios. Take a listen to this.
Fade away into the distance. There you are. Two and a half minutes of New Year's Day there from U2. We have, of course, Bono of U2 with us. And when I told some young friends of mine today that we actually had Bono with us from U2, the excitement was only fierce and mighty, lined up on their drawers there. Whose concept was that video?
I had this idea of using the sort of snow as a sort of covering. We've been using white flags on stage. We have an album coming out called War, but its theme is surrender. And we had this idea of large white flags, which in fact blow by wind machines on stage. And I thought of the white snow, the ultimate sort of symbol of surrender. So when I said to the manager, I said to Paul McGuinness, I said, look, I'd like to record a video in the snow. And he went, oh, well, where are we going to get snow? This was earlier on in the year. And so eventually we arranged to go to Sweden and to Stockholm. But when we got to Stockholm, there was no snow. They had a record sort of calm and... warm winter. So we got to Stockholm. We had to fly up towards Lapland to actually catch the snow. And finally we spent 2 days there sort of getting frostbite and disillusioned with the whole thing. And came home, played our first night of the Concert Tour of Ireland, which is in Cork. Of course, it was knee-deep in snow, so you didn't need to go there at all.
Right.
But it is a wonderful video. I'm very proud of it.
Good video. Now, you regard yourself as running a business organization. Is that so?
I have to be. I mean, I have to sort of play two roles. Mm. I am the singer of the group U2. And I started the group when I was 17, 18, and there's four of us. It's very much a four-legged table, U2. But we learned. We learned that we would have to be smart. And we would have to take it seriously on a business level, or else other people would take it away from us seriously. Mm. So we have surrounded ourselves with people who I believe are the best in the world at their job.
They were good mates, along with Bob. I mean, he really started Bob Geldof up, didn't he?
He did. He gave, you know, U2 and Boomtown Rats
airtime, Henry, which was a godsend to them. I mean, Bono still tells a story about, I think the producer go on the Late Late Show about 1979, 1980, and Gay had to sort of bump them at the last minute, which would occasionally happen. And how disappointed Bono was actually taking a bus to
really
far from his rock style lifestyle. Then Henry was taking a bus. He was on the bus and he arrives at RTE to find, no, sorry, you've been bumped. But no, he gave bands like that. Exposure in the early parts to them. He, one of his most memorable shows, Henry, I remember, was a tribute to the Dubliners, who were a famous sort of folk ballad band. And he basically had anybody who was anybody in Irish folk music on that show. And very memorably, speaking of him again, Charles Haughey comes out on stage and Gay's go, oh, Charlie, about you. And Charlie's coming out with sort of special edition albums, but here's what happened that was unexpected. It was just that Charles Haughey would then just walk off stage. And, you know, Gay goes, oh, thank you very much. You're great. And then Charles Haughey turns to him, I think I'll stay. Oh, Gay not missing. Oh, you'll stay. Well, can we find Mr. Haughey a seat? And Charlie not missing a beat. Well, I'm always looking for a seat. So, but he never missed a beat. And I remember the end of that show where basically the entire sort of family of folk music, famous folk musicians in Ireland and ballad singers in Ireland, along with Gay Byrne and Charles Haughey, sing Brendan Behan's song The Old Triangle right at the end. A powerful, powerful moment. And Gay was a Dubliner. He was a real Dubliner.
I wanted to ask you about that, and if you've just joined us, I'm talking with Ronan Seagrave, our correspondent in North America. He is in Winnipeg for us in Canada. I've forgotten what I was going to ask now.
Speaking of sort of Gay's sort of background, I mean, he grew up in Dublin.
Yes.
And he often talked about, remember his time at Sin Street School, which is a very famous Catholic school ran by the Christian Brothers. I mean, even the mention of the Christian Brothers, Henry, for Irish people would probably bring back very
shivers up their spine.
And they were beating out corporal punishment, or quite frankly, Henry, violence on a daily basis to students. And Gay, in one interview, talked about how he would be physically terrified and really sick going in every day, knowing that there'd be sort of more violence inflicted on him. But the interesting thing was it didn't shake his sort of Catholicism or his faith in any way. He sort of accepted it and recognised he got some kind of value out of it, not in any way excusing the horrible abuse he got from the Christian Brothers, but it was definitely something that shaped him in terms of him as a person.
I just want to paint a picture of Dublin in the 1970s and 1980s. South Dublin was seen as the more prestigious side of O'Connell Bridge in the city. North Dublin was seen as the more working class side, but there was a place on the north shore of Dublin called Howth, which is where he lived. It was, by all accounts, a posh area of North Dublin, was it not?
Yes, it was. I mean, Gay had a very nice little big house in that area, as you say, the posh part of North Dublin, and he loved Howth, and he was also an avid walker, and would spend a lot of his free time with his wife Kathleen Watkins, sort of walking around Howth and walking around the harbour. It was a place that was incredibly special to him, and as I say, he was a home bird. He was somebody who grew up in Dublin and wanted to spend his life and career in Dublin, despite, you know, offers from the US or indeed repeated offers from British Television to work there. That really didn't interest him. He was very happy and content, I think, with his place and his status. As, without question, Henry, the best and most brilliant, exceptional Irish broadcaster of his generation. And he was very content with that and very content with his role.
And he was never really trained. Like, you know the way, you know, young folks, and to the chagrin of people like me who fought my way into radio, these young folks, they go to broadcast school, they go to all this sort of rubbish, as far as I'm concerned. Then they're put in front of a microphone on the national broadcaster. Rubbish, I say. Get some experience. And this is what I did. I scraped my way in.
It was starting to change, Henry, towards the end of Gay's time. And I think the reason for that is that the great sort of social issues and other issues that Gay was debating were coming to a sort of conclusion, if you like. Ireland was changing, and Gay had helped to shape some of that change, but it was becoming a more liberal, tolerant society. With subsequent changes, as we know, in areas of certainly contraception, obviously, and abortion and divorce and now marriage equality, it was a changing Ireland. And I think, you know, there isn't really the need for a show like The Late Late Show to be having these big debates, because a lot of these matters are sort of settled really at this point. And it has turned into, with Ryan Tuberty in particular, a much more sort of US style conventional chat show. With a focus on sort of, you know, celebrities and the like coming on. I mean, there's still things that are
they still cover issues,
they still cover issues, and they still have political interviews. And the other thing that's sort of been maintained was Gay Byrne used to do a toy show
every Christmas.
A few weeks before Christmas, every Christmas, Gay would come on his Christmas jumper, and
jumper.
That hideous jumpers he would wear, and sort of demonstrate toys and have sort of children acts on it. I mean, it's become much more, I would say, lavish production under Tuberty with sort of musical acts and that kind of thing.
You know, Ronan, it was always commercial, let's face it. It was a big ad campaign, really.
Yes, it was. I mean, it has become a bit more, as I say, a lavish kind of production.
Sophisticated, yes.
Than the homespun kind of feel that the Gay had. But the other thing he used to do, and there was a controversy about this one year, he used to have an annual, I don't remember it, Henry, he'd have an annual competition where he would give members of the public, I guess they sort of wrote in or had a competition for it, but they would be given a sum of money to go out and buy sort of antiques in very poor condition, and they would be given some additional money to restore it. And they would get a prize, Henry, quite a good prize, money or a car or something for the winner of that every year. And one year, the person who won it was revealed that actually she'd had the piece of furniture restored by a professional restorer and basically conned the nation on the Late Late Show. And because Gay took awful umbrage that after
oh my God!
They hadn't caught it out, you know, and it ended up in court and everything.
It ended up in court. Who won?
It ended up in court. I know she had to pay some sort of damages or something and return the prize, but yeah, it ended up in a court case. And you know, he used to do things like that every year. That sort of, he had a fashion show every year that his wife Kathleen Watkins would compare. There were specials, as I say, around musical acts like the Dubliners. You know, he had specials recognising very sort of special entertainers in Irish history. I remember an early one with Noel Purcell, who was an Irish Dublin
very, very actor. Good friends with my grandfather, actually.
A wonderful man, and, you know, had a very successful sort of movie career in England.
He gave me a 10-pence piece in a bar in Dublin, and Maureen Potter was a friend of Harry O'Donovan, my grandfather, who was a scriptwriter for theatre.
Wonderful, it's still actually available, it's one that wasn't wiped, Henry. He did a wonderful tribute show to Maureen Potter with, at that time, a who's who of folk involved in Irish comedy. And Gay had a great interest in Irish comedy. One of the shows he did after he left the Late Late Show was called Make 'em Laugh, which was around various comedians, not just Irish comedians, but comedians, you know, profiling various different comedians. And he did have specials with people like, as I say, Maureen Potter, Hal Roach, if you remember him.
Yes, indeed I do. Ronan, I've met all these people because my grandfather was in the scene. And it is very strange because I was sitting in the Gaiety Theatre, and I think Maureen Potter had a show called Gales of Laughter. Do you remember
that's
that?
That's right, yes. And Jimmy I was in O'Dea the audience, and people like that. Yeah,
myself and my sister were in the audience, and all of a sudden at the end of the show, in the beautiful old Gaiety Theatre, I must have been 8 and my sister 9, she says hello to us. And we're going, wow! We're blown away. Look, we've got to come to the end of this, Ronan, but before that, we talked about, Gay possibly becoming president of Ireland. Michael D. Higgins has been president of Ireland for some time. Let's listen to him talking the other day, only the other day, about Gay Byrne.
Yes. So Gay, I think, was aware of what was happening, and he took a great deal of what the people were thinking. And I think what made him just unique was is that he had an instinct for the decencies of people that weren't suppressed, mm-hmm. but maybe repressed. And therefore, if you gave it time, he was able to wait for the click in the interview.
Yes.
You could sail into trouble very, very nicely. But also, and as well as that, is that he was quite careful about it. That I remember in the, much later when I was on the Late Late Oven with people like Dr. Paddy Leahy and myself.
Yes.
And we were on a certain side of a certain argument in many cases. And you weren't short of opposition at the time.
Yes.
But he was very fair.
Yes.
And I think that was impressive.
And I thought that was a beautiful thing that he did there.
He summed him up well. And
I love Michael D. Higgins. He's a funny looking little fella, but he represents Ireland very well to the world.
Yeah, no, he does. I mean, he does. And it was, again, Michael D. got that right in terms of how the Irish people viewed Gay Byrne, how important Gay Byrne was in telling the social story and the social fabric, the changing social fabric of Ireland over the past 50, 60 years. Mm. It is incredibly sad, Henry, to think he's no longer with us. I think you and I both probably thought Gay would go on forever.
Yeah, I did think more recently, you know.
He was such a permanent fixture. Yeah.
He did have, you know, quite a long...
he was quite ill.
And for quite a long time. But 85's not too bad an innings, I would say. What do you think, before we go, Ronan, what do you think the people of Ireland are feeling right now as... this icon, and I don't use that word very easily or very often, but he really was an icon. What do you think is the sense of feeling across Ireland today?
I think a sense of loss, Henry. Gay Byrne, while we never knew Gay Byrne, and as I say, we talked about how Gay probably kept aspects of his life private, but we all felt we knew Gay Byrne, and that Gay Byrne was part of everyday life in Ireland. The radio every day, the Late Late Show, everybody watching it. It was always the highest rated show in Irish television throughout its entire run with Gay Byrne. He was part of us, and he was part of Irish life, and he was actually quite an important part of Irish life. And I think a recognition, Henry, of how important he was is that his funeral mass is actually being televised live on Irish television. And I think that's probably what Gay would have wanted. Mm. He was part of the people, a voice of the people, if you like, of Ireland. And I think it's very appropriate and fitting that his funeral is being televised.
Absolutely. You've been listening to Ronan Seagrave and myself, Henry. I'm in Sydney. Ronan is in Winnipeg in Canada. We both grew up with the Irish broadcaster, Gay Byrne, who sadly passed away Monday local time in Dublin, surrounded by his friends and family in Howth. Thank you so much for joining me, Ronan.
It's a pleasure as always, Henry. Take care.
And let's go out with a couple of audio/video messages. This is radio, so you'll hear them in audio, but it all is the same. This is a couple of messages from Gay Byrne's friends around the world. This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
I'll miss you, Gay. Thanks for your FaceTimes. Thanks for the times that you prop me up when I needed propping up. And thank you for all the smiles that you brought to me.
Rest in peace, Gay Byrne. Ireland's father figure and certainly the most loved man in Ireland. We loved you for your truth, your fairness. You were always balanced, and above all, you were very, very honest. At a time when I was down on my luck, you were there for me and you were kind to me, and I'll be eternally grateful for that.
My entire show during the 90s was Gay Byrne. I had a Late Late Toy Show routine, I had a Rosa Tralee routine. I didn't have an act without Gay Byrne, and that's not even the greatest debt I owe him. The one thing I learned, and this is true for broadcasting or comedy, sometimes it's about how you talk, but much more than that, it's about how you listen. And nobody listened better than Gay Byrne.
When you get down to the river, don't pay him till the other side. And I wish that I could see you one more time. Yes, I wish that I could see you one more time. Thanks, Gay. You've given so much to so many people.
His love of Donegal is well documented, and all of us at home are very, very sad to hear of his passing. He will for sure be greatly missed, but never, ever forgotten.
Yourself and myself had some good times. I thank you for all you gave me. And that's everything.
You have been listening to a Bondi Tunes international production. I'm Henry O'Donovan in Sydney, Australia.